Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm Tiny.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? I am not Tyler, and he's not Tiny, actually. He's a pretty big guy.
Growing at a rapid rate.
He's been working out and just being Mr. Fit. And I took I took a half mile walk this morning, so I did something.
It's good.
We about to do a bunch of walking this next week, so I'm kind of like trying to prep my legs a little bit. I'm not done working out for the day, but that's all the time I had for this morning.
I mean, you should definitely get a 3-hour workout in today.
I might. Because I don't have the kiddo and you're leaving early, so
dang, dude,
can actually go do something.
Get that whoop on.
What stinks is not stinks, but I just tend to garden more than work out nowadays. When your workout station is right next to your garden, the distractions are real strong.
I tend to do the opposite and kill all my tomato plants.
Have you checked on them lately?
Oh, I need to grab those, don't I?
Well, why don't we check on them right quick?
I'll check on them. You can go ahead and talk to these people.
So Tyler has been hardening off his tomatoes lately. Before I go too far in the garden stuff, guys, that's not what the whole podcast is going to be about. I know some of y'all like to rage about us for talking gardening too much. Some of y'all like it, so stick around for 5 minutes if you don't, or if you do. Tyler's been trying to harden his tomatoes off, and what ends up happening is he forgets they're out there and they get sunbaked. And they look like a 85-year-old lady from Sicily, and that's not a good idea. So we're trying to make sure that it doesn't happen to him. It happened to my squash the other day too, but it was more of a wind situation. It was like 85 and windy, which is a real good way to make squash plant jerky, and that's what happened to me. However,
I love how you talk about an 85-year-old woman from Sicily, knowing that there isn't one of those that listens to this podcast.
That's right. Cannot offend her. And if that's your grandma, I'm sure she's sweet.
Sweet and leathery.
It's going to be garden planting time real soon. We've got some stuff in right now. Pretty much all my potatoes are popping. I heard the other day that the dark nights of March is when your potatoes should poke through. When there's no moon, that's when it should start happening.
Mine are not there yet, and guess what?
Did you callus them up? You did?
Yep.
What's up with that? How deep did you bury them?
Deep.
That's probably why. That's okay. We can talk potato tactics later. But
PTs.
We have got a lot coming up. We're about to head to Tennessee to go turkey hunt with one Chadrick Rice of Cruiser Saddles. I don't imagine that we will kill a turkey out of a saddle.
I'd like to catch a fish out of a saddle.
I might do that, too. That would be pretty fun.
Lean out over the lake and just Dude. Make it happen.
He's got Chain a boat pole. Dock or something. I think his parents live on the lake. We could just, like, hang in the saddle right there out over and just, like, jig around.
That'd be sweet, cool. Dude. Just pop them straight up like them South Pacific people that just whip those fish into the boats or whatever.
I watched something like that. You know, like a reel or whatever. And people in, like, South Asia fish with these long, limber cane poles for huge fish. And it's, like, a real weird thing. You know what I'm talking about?
I mean, I get. Are we talking about the same thing here where they whip them into the boat?
No, but it's similar to that. Like, when you're talking about they're using, like, a really stiff rod and they're catching, like, 10-pound tuna and just overpowering them. And flipping them up in the boat.
Well, it's long and limber still.
Is it?
I mean, yeah, it's fair. I think they're fairly limber still. And they basically whip them back over their heads. They fly into the boat, and they come unhooked. Somehow they have a technique that brings them unhooked, and then they put it back down in there.
Well, I think they're using like a, not a hook, they're using like a spreader or something like that. So like when they put tension on it, it gets stuck in the mouth.
Yeah.
But anyways, no, like for fishing for like big catfish or carp or something, like they'll use a similar setup and they just hook it and then it's like human versus fish and the fish doesn't get to go anywhere instead of like having a reel to let line out.
Yeah.
Which sounds not ideal. That's all I have to say about it. Have you ever been using a jigging pole for crappie and hooked a 5, 6, 7 pound bass?
I don't use jigging poles that often for crappie.
Yeah.
But, so, no, probably not. I've hooked, I was fishing for bluegills one time, had a bed of just, like, solid half-pounders. I was just one after another, dude. And I hooked one time, and it, you know, kind of did its deal where it turns over on its side and starts flipping out, you know. And, like, I can't see it. It's deep. It's, like, 4 foot down. And all of a sudden, my line just goes, and basically fight this fish that I feel like is a bass. Didn't realize that the bass had a hold of the bluegill. I thought that I had just hooked a bass. And it gets out there a long ways. Anyway, I start stripping it back in, get it in close, or not close, but like 10 yards, and then it just goes slack. I'm like, dadgum it. So I start stripping it in. I still got the bluegill on there, and he's kind of shredded up pretty good, probably still alive. And when I get him close, there's a 5 and 7 pounder right behind him.
Two of them.
Looking at him, yeah.
Ooh, ragers.
Yep. This is like May, I think. And they were just, we had grass beds in there back in the day.
It's cool.
Yeah, and they were just fish everywhere. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
We've been doing some fishing.
Yeah, we have. Interesting things can happen whenever you're fishing for small fish.
Yeah.
Because big fish are out there.
They are.
Yeah. We actually have been doing a lot of fishing for some small and big fish. Should we just
let it out? Just let the cat out of the bag, bro.
All right, guys. Here's what's happening. As Chadrick would say, it's like this.
It's like this.
We've produced some fishing videos that are actually pretty slick. We sat here and watched ourselves on a video that Tyler edited for like 27 minutes the other day, which sounds real conceited. But it was real interesting.
It was.
It wasn't because it was us. It was just because it's cool, man. Make it cool.
The fish make it cool.
That's right. And we've been ripping the lips and wiggling our hips, hopping ponds. So this series is going to be called Pond Hopping.
Yep.
And it's going to be a deal where, you know, there's a lot of fishing stuff out there in this world where you got to have a big old boat and go do all this crazy stuff. Well, just a lot of us don't have that. So in true Element fashion, we're doing things the poor boy way.
It's similar to what we have done with the deer stuff.
That's right.
It's like run around, try to find permission. If you can find some public, do that too, and catch the biggest bass you can potentially catch, just like we go around and try to shoot the biggest bucks we can potentially shoot.
Yeah.
And that's what the fishing is, and that's what we've done. We've fished. We've pretty much, I think we've got about 2 episodes that are produced so far. One of them is pretty much ready to go and will be coming out soon. If not, I don't know for sure when this actually will air, but it may already be released by the time this podcast airs. It'll be the first episode. It's pretty cool. That was all private land stuff. And then we went and did some public land fishing the other day on a pond.
That was pretty cool, too.
And it was actually really good, which is weird because the pond that we thought was going to be better wasn't. And that's the beauty of this thing, man. It's like, it's kind of like running around getting permission on properties for deer hunting. Like, sometimes it's just not a good place. You know, like, it just doesn't turn out to be good. And sometimes it's better than you thought it was going to be. And that's what happened the other day. Like, the first pond was better than we thought it would probably be. And then the second pond was worse than we thought it would be. So
we've been, is proselytized, is that the right word?
Like, say prophesized.
You are like coming up with thoughts and ideas and have questions and answers within your own thoughts and ideas.
Pontificating? Pontificating?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Pontificating. That's it. So we've been here sitting thinking about this and talking about it quite a bit on the banks of these pools. In case y'all didn't know, we call them pools, but most of the world calls them a pond or
what
a
else
tank.
Can they be called, Casey?
Ponds, tanks, pools, fishing holes, sloughs. I don't know. Maybe that's it. Lakes, depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
In Minnesota, they count every little tiny as a lake. That way they can get 10,000. Actually, there's a lot more than that up there. But either way. So all those type things, right? So not a big bot, not a reservoir. However, we were fishing next to a big body of water the other day in one of these pools or ponds. And then we went deeper to the other one that wasn't as good. So we've been talking about how do fish get in these pools? And in that instance, it would like there's a correlation at least of the one that's closer to the lake has better fish in it. So is it a bird leg fish egg type thing?
I like it.
That's it.
Bird that's leg it. Fish egg.
That's right. Because it's close to the lake, is that why the fish are better there?
I don't think so. I think in that situation, it's different. But it could be.
Or is it because people are chunking them in there because it's close to the lake? Like they're
maybe
they're seeding the pond.
Maybe. The ponds are different, which is wild because the second one I would think would hold more bass.
If I could have that on my property.
Oh, my goodness,
dude. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, we did get a few bluegill bites. So we know there's bluegill in there. The water was super clear and deep. And I don't know. There had to. I mean, there. You have to think, like, there's probably a few bass that can bed up in those shallower areas. But overall, like, for the amount of square footage that the lake is, there's not a whole lot of bedding habitat probably right in there.
They can figure it out.
They can figure it out.
Yeah.
So there should be bass in there. But we did not get a bite that we know of, really.
I thought you hung one and he ran you up in the weeds.
Dude, I have a feeling that what happened was a bluegill hit it and I set the hook into a weed. But I don't know. I don't want to be the guy that's always like, oh, got a bite. You know what I mean?
I like me and that guy.
The hype man.
That's right.
I watched the Key and Peele episode the other day. The hype man that goes over the top or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, so their skits are funny.
They are, man. You have been talking about this quite a bit, and it seems to be a true thing among like anybody who does pond management, is that you either have to manage for crappie or manage against them, one of the two. We never fished with – well, I threw a little crankbait a little bit, but that may or may not have caught one. But we never fished with crappie gear in that back pool. There's a chance that that thing's full of crappie.
Yeah.
And that's why there's not really any bass.
It's true.
Can you explain a little bit about what you know about why that's the case?
From what I understand, and this is basically – comes from a guy that we follow that I learned
– I've heard it through my life too.
Okay. So, yeah. I mean, I haven't really thought about it much because I've never been much of a pond manager. Haven't ever had land really in a pond on it. So, but basically this guy's a biologist, aquatic biologist, and he says that crappie pretty much, they grow fast and they eat pretty voraciously, which is weird to me because I don't feel like in the lake they do that except for during the spawn, you know, when you put one on their head. But they apparently eat a lot of things that are in the same type of forage and like size of forage that bass would eat, I guess. And so they don't leave much room for bass. And what the issue with them getting big quick is that they are not forage species for very long also, mm-hmm. so, for the bass. So the bass can't eat them once they get to a certain size, especially if these are pond bass that are 2 to 4 pounds. Mm-hmm. You know, a big crappie's not going to fit in that fish's mouth. For, you know, it's going to be a very short window. Yeah. So that's kind of the issue. And then those crappie proliferate, and it's just a cycle that you can't, the bass mm-hmm. can't overcome, really.
Yeah. I've heard that another, you know, kind of along that line is that they get to that size quick. And then at that point in time, they are like, what's the right word here? They don't have much discretion in what they eat. So they just eat everything mm-hmm. that they can. And it ends up being where not only are they eating like bass fry, but they're also eating like all of the invertebrates and stuff to where there's just not much of anything in the pond mm-hmm. except for crappie. Mm-hmm. So, and it just makes it kind of like a food desert for bass mm-hmm. pretty much because those crappie can do that. And it's yep. weird. Like a crappie's made to not be eaten by a bass. Mm-hmm. Like they're wide
right.
for their weight.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like,
except for the state record.
Is it not wide for its weight?
Well, I'm saying the state record bass.
Oh, yeah.
He could definitely eat a crappie.
He might have. no, that's, yeah, for sure. But for like, you're saying like, I mean, a bluegill, a big bluegill is like 3/4 of a pound, mm-hmm. right? And they're also made to not be eaten by bass, but they, a good-sized bass can fit that in his mouth. A big crappie is over 2 pounds. An average-sized crappie is probably a little bit over a pound. So, like, that fish is, for only being 1 pound, is like 6 or 8 inches mm-hmm. wide. So, any way a bass puts his mouth on it, he can't really eat it very good.
Yep.
So,
you know what's weird is that a snake will attempt some stuff like that that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen some snakes. I shot a snake.
So small.
You think that's why?
I think so.
They, I saw a snake one time that had a ginormous catfish in its mouth. Like, there, it was no way. And when I walked up on the snake, like, it couldn't get the thing out of its mouth because
mm-hmm.
it was just basically going to choke on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I smoked it with a shotgun, which was weird, too.
What were you doing with a shotgun when snakes were out?
It was at my dad's place, so I just ran up there and grabbed a shotgun, and he was still there because he had a giant catfish in his mouth. Couldn't go anywhere.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
It's weird.
So
snakes are weird.
They are, man.
Creep me out.
So you saw one yesterday.
Yeah.
We were pond hopping yesterday.
Yep.
And had a weird day.
Yeah.
Because we went to this place. I mean, this is another one of those pools. It was like, if I had that on my property, dadgummit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lots of surface area.
Somebody's coming in my house.
Lots of surface area. Not a lot of depth, though, but pretty good.
Mm.
And then just no bigger fish, which is another problem with pond management. And we don't know that much about this stuff, right? But we do know that if a pool can and will get overpopulated with bass, unless there are external factors, right? Mm-hmm. That's a thing.
Yeah.
And then it will stunt the growth of the bass, and then you end up with a whole bunch of one-pounders.
Yeah.
And that's what we were seeing.
Yeah, maybe even less than that.
Yeah.
Weight-wise. They were all kind of thin in the back end a little mm-hmm. bit. They didn't look bad, but they just were all, you know, maxed out pretty mm-hmm. much with their food capacity. So, yeah, that's what we ended up doing. But we've caught some pretty big bass in this series already. We've only fished 4 pools.
Some of the most entertaining bed fishing I've done.
Yeah,
has been this pool bed fishing.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff. I caught what maybe my biggest fly rod bass. So that's going to be in this first episode. You get to see it. Pretty cool stuff. Our boy Chris Webb came out, filmed some stuff for us, and also brought his fly rod out because he's trying to get into that. And he caught his first fly rod fish
mm-hmm. That's
also.
Cool.
And it took him a while, but he got it done.
That's right. There's a steep learning curve when you get the fly rod out, man.
That's right.
Anything past 10 foot is pretty hard.
Yep. Yep. And your rod is 9 foot.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So that's it's been fun. Hopefully you guys enjoy that. Also, those are, you know, the fish that we've been catching are H-A-W-G-S. Those are hogs. We've also been doing some H-O-G-S stuff. And we had a video that we posted recently that has gone nuts. It's real popular with the foreign crowd. The Euro crowd.
Yeah. Not and, the Euro nymphing crowd, though, right?
No, not Czech nymphing. Yeah. This is the European people of the world that like to think about Russian boars and Spanish pigs. And, yeah, I don't think the Euro people like us that much.
I don't know what
But there's also some
is.
Americans that will make some funny
if
comments,
you're a,
too.
If you're a loyal follower of the element, we could use some nice comments on that video.
There are plenty, but
there are
what did the guy say last night? That
oh man, and here's let me give you all a caveat to this thing. All right, this is it took a little while to learn, and Tyler is probably better at it than I am, but when you start putting yourself on YouTube, especially as your channel grows like ours has, you got to really not pay that much attention to bad comments. But we still like to read them because y'all say nice things about us sometimes, too. Yep. So, and we want to be, like, talking to folks.
Responsive. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. But sometimes somebody says something so stupid and it just makes me mad. And that happened yesterday. This guy.
I'm going to read the exact comment.
Yeah, say the comment. And we're not, like, trying to be Karens or anything about this. and I just deleted the comment because it's like, whatever. It's too dumb to leave on there.
All right. This guy, I don't even know how to say his last name. He says, stop playing Hollywood and start hunting. There's not a whole lot of punctuation here, so let me just read it kind of straight through so maybe you can understand it. I'll try to read it like what he should have said.
Okay.
Stop playing Hollywood and start hunting. That means 100% on the hog and zero on the lens.
Mind you, this is a guy watching a YouTube video.
A hunting YouTube video.
A hunting YouTube video.
Hog hunting YouTube video.
Wants you to not be filming.
He wants you to not be filming so that he, if he was logical, could not watch any hunting videos.
Oh, man. It's, I told Tyler last night, I was like, I almost decided to let this guy know how smooth his brain is, but I just decided to delete the comment anyway. So.
I don't think that I'm better at it than you are. I definitely am very experienced because we had...
You've been raged a little more
We had
me.
A video... Well, first of all, this video I get raged in the whole time because I'm wearing a blue shirt pig hunting, which shows you like that we're just out here doing this whenever we can, right? Mm-hmm. It's not... we're not putting on, you know, first light to go pig hunting every time.
Yeah.
Sometimes like it's just... Well, I was working today, and I got in my truck and took my bow and went before it got dark, you know.
Opportunistic
hunting. You know, 0% on the lens.
That's right.
And I'm going to have to start saying that. 0% on the lens, KC. That's why we have interns. So, anyway, I got raged first and foremost, pretty much, within the Element channel for the Frankenstein video, which is also known as the oldest buck ever video. It's the oldest buck I've ever shot. And it was our first, like, viral encounter on our channel where, like, we had... This is the weirdest thing. You know, we were a tiny channel at the time, really. This is, like, 2019 in November. I released this video 10 months prior, and it had, like, 1,800 views. And then... In November, in like 3 weeks, it got 100,000 views, and like the comments were bad because I don't know. I felt like I tried to do justice to this deer, this video. It meant a lot to me to be able to take the deer and to kind of like, and he died quick. Like there was no sign of struggle or nothing. It was a liver shot. He died quick and was eaten whole that night in about... I don't know. I basically was back out there in like 10 hours or something like that. And, you know, I'm not going to go through the whole story because I've done that. But there was a special circumstances that led me to believe that I should let him chill because I didn't want to go out there and spook him in the middle of the dark and him get off the property, right? Because I knew basically where he's going to be. Well, he got eaten like I'm talking every ounce of meat from the base of the skull down to the tail by coyotes that night. And like I said, it was just, he was just laying there like he hadn't moved one ounce. So, I mean, he died quick. But, dude, people do not like seeing that recovery scene where...
Well, the problem with the whole thing is that this was long before you and I could just follow each other around all the time and film. So you're self-filming from the ground, and I'm not there to help you with this.
Oh, yeah.
And we had some camera issues where the thing timed out on you or whatever. Yep. So pretty much your first shot on the deer, you had it framed up, but it didn't get filmed. Mm-hmm. So the first shot that is shown in the video...
I had the GoPro on, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember how it goes.
Yeah,
now.
You had the GoPro on, but yeah. People just can't figure that stuff out, man.
Yeah.
So... Like, the first shot that's on film is your follow-up when the deer's clearly out there hurt, right? And you're trying to finish him off.
Yeah.
And people are thinking that you took a 80-yard shot as your first shot on a deer. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's just
and like, I, and we had been, like, running all across, the states, basically. And I didn't have my bottom pin, whatever it was broken off, basically. Mm-hmm. I had broken it off, and so like I had to really guess on a. I think it was a 50-yard was my pin that I had left. It was mm-hmm. my 50 or something like that. And so I had to basically guess. I knew he was like 87 yards, and I said I'm gonna put my 50 high, and I put it, and it shot low quite a bit because I just haven't ever shot my 50 at 80. So mm-hmm. That made a bunch of people mad that I shot an 87-yard shot with a pin or wasn't, And then there was people that were mad that I shot an 87-yard shot. There was people mad that I didn't go looking for him that night, even though they didn't have a clue the circumstance. Mm-hmm. There was people that were mad that and here's the deal. It was like I've had people reach out to me and say, like, they people don't trap anymore. So coyotes are an issue when it comes to this stuff across a lot of states, you know what I mean? And so it was one of those deals. But anyway, I got so many rager comments, dude. And this was our first encounter with it, and I just didn't handle it all very well. I need to make sure that I don't have any dumb comments out there anymore, probably. But like, I'm not saying I got real ugly, but I was probably snarky and more kind of sarcastic than I should have been, probably, and that doesn't really solve any issues. So I'd like a chance to respond to those in a better way, if at all.
My favorite thing to do on YouTube, and I don't do it anymore because people figure it out, but is to go on like one of my alt accounts and then like hype the person up who's being dumb. You know, like the thing to say, like I would get on and say, like, yeah, man, I don't know why these guys are even filming this stuff, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of make that guy think.
Yeah.
I think that happened one time. I was thinking about this. It confused one guy, I think, one time, like when he was like, hold on, who's this guy that's with me on this side? Is he actually with me on the side or is he not?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. That was the first time we really had to deal with this. So I've had a lot of that over the years. That video has since calmed down quite a bit, but mm-hmm. it still cranks, And now we just have to deal with the fact that, French people don't love the way that we hunt for hogs, I guess. So
French people probably don't like the way that we hunt just because they don't hunt there.
What does Uncle Ted say? You can't do this in France.
Does he say that?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Not nearly as free, are they?
No. Freedom fries.
Which, one thing you love is how free America is, right?
That's right, man.
So many taxes.
Freedom don't come free. Which is such a dumb statement. Well, whatever. Anyway,
speaking
sorry.
Of Casey's. if y'all only knew. So I'm looking at a box over there.
Are you?
Yep. And
getting boxed in.
Can
you explain that joke? I don't know it. I don't understand.
For Hunter?
Yes.
I think he just said it one time. Gonna box him up.
I thought it was saying because like whenever we posted a South Dakota buck. I tag everybody around so that, like, if you see, like, you click on it and see who's tagged, you can still see the dude and the animal. And I thought that's why he said boxed him in or something like that.
Oh, I think it's just, like, that's his way of saying I'm going to kill him and take him home.
It's weird.
Yeah. I like it.
That's good.
Anyway, we got some new bows, and
you're telling me you're not gonna have a problem with broken off pins and old junky equipment and
stuff.
Man,
I don't know.
Hopefully not.
I won't have old junky equipment. I might have new junky equipment. I don't know. Never shot one of these bows, but I'm excited to. Yeah. And
you have.
Well, I have actually. Yep, I shot one bow one time with nothing on it but a rest.
Mm-hmm.
And
Tyler hates that.
I do hate that. And I actually really thought it shot pretty daggum smooth, which it was surprising. I'll say that. So we won't tell you what brand this is yet.
Ooh.
But we will tell you at some point.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to say anything about it yet. So.
All right. Then anyway, if that's the case.
But I just wanted y'all to know we got some new bows. We're going to be working on new bow video content this spring and summer. And we're going to just show you some of the stuff that we've got going on. We're going to be shooting some ZMR arrows. We're going to be shooting some potentially some new broadheads. I'm potentially going to be shooting two different arrows this year. At least two.
Are you?
Potentially, yeah. That's cool. I guess I'm probably, so it depends on draws, but I should draw a hunt that I may need to shoot a slightly lighter arrow just to get, just to help myself with like last minute long range shot potentially.
Hey, I put in, so continue on what you're saying.
That's kind of where I'm at, yeah.
I put in my specs for what this bow I think are going to be. And on the ZMR, it's fit me out a 447 grain arrow.
Is that the arrow with the broadhead?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Mine was like 515 or something the other day. What weight are you shooting?
70.
70, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
I think it's, you should try it again and see. Which try that a couple I don't want to shoot that lot, personally.
Yeah.
But out west, I can see where it's handy, you know, because if you're off 7 yards on your range, you're still probably going to kill.
That's the hardest thing, dude, is like really ranging in open country is the hardest thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you're up above tree line or out on the plains or like you could be in the back of my pasture here stalking a deer. You know, like if you're trying to range in a grassland habitat, that is difficult sometimes because
flat on the ground.
You got to get up above the grass to get a range a lot of times. Or if you just think you're going to range a big old grass that's sticking up,
it's tough.
That's probably not going to happen, you know. Like, or I'm just not going to feel confident about that being the actual range.
I like yucca country. You can bounce off that's a yucca
what we did,
real good.
That's what we did this year with my buck.
Yeah.
I ranged a yucca that was like 10 or 15 yards to the right of him, basically. Mm-hmm. Where he was bedded. And so I knew, and I kept ranging it just to make sure, you know, but I ranged it and I was like, that's right there, 50, man. And so, and that's actually, I think what Eric focused on too, was the yucca so that when he stood up, he was pretty much nailing focus.
That's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a tough thing to do, man, is in that open country. But it's so weird because like every once in a while you'll be in open country and it's the easiest thing ever because you're like hidden and you can just range the animal and shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, it's like, I got to like try to stay lower than grass and still get a range.
Yep.
It's real tough.
Yep.
One of the things that I do a lot of times in that open country is I try to figure out, like, especially if you got bedded deer and you got a spot you're going to stalk to and you know, like, you can see, like, kind of some defining features.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually get on X and use their little line distance tool or whatever. And figure out, and you did that, I think, in Kansas.
Yeah,
right?
I did on that stalk. I used the Onyx stuff. So, first of all, I used Onyx to mark the deer from where I thought he was at, and that was actually one of the hardest things I've done because that country is kind of featureless, and it was very difficult to figure out which like little draw in the open he was next to. You know what I mean? It was tough. I spent a lot of time doing that, but I actually did nail it. And then that helped me as we got closer. We're just walking down the middle of this draw and I can look at my map and be like, oh yeah, he's still 200 yards or whatever. And then eventually like I was like, oh, he's like 100 yards. So when we come up over this thing, we're going to have to crawl for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, and that way, you know, which his antlers are so big and so white, like there was no way to miss it if you came up, you know. But the thing is, we were working into the wind. So he was looking at, I mean, dead down at us pretty much. So you didn't want to peek up over and see his antlers because then you were seeing his eyeballs too, you know. So, but yeah, I definitely use that. And that is a handy thing for sure.
It works pretty good too, which is pretty cool.
The only thing, and I think I talked about this recently or maybe in the last podcast, the only thing that I struggle with in that situation, not the only thing, but one thing I can think about that I struggle with situation in that situation, sorry, was I have a dual caliper Cobra, which I really like. In a tree stand, it's awesome most situations. But on the ground, like, I'm not just, like, clipped on waiting for this deer to stand up for 45 minutes. You know what I mean? So when I did have to sit up and then clip on, you want to talk about freak out mode, dude. I'm talking. And so, like, I think what I'm potentially going to do this year is get Jake at Cobra to send me a it's the moment that you shoot. It's got the single, it's his hook style.
Gonna be a hook boy.
It's a hook. So I'm gonna be hooked. And I think I'm gonna shoot the hook release, or I'm gonna try it this summer with the new bow and see what I think. And I imagine it'll be just fine.
I bet you'll like it.
I bet I will too.
Cause I came from a,
talk about why that's easier than a dual caliper.
Yeah. So I shot a dual caliper all my life, like most of us probably started out with, because it's what you could find at Walmart, right? Jake likes to say this ain't your daddy's Cobra, I think is what he likes to say. Because Cobra, you know, he bought it, I think, 9 years ago or something like that. So a dual caliper, you pretty much have to look down there to get it on there. Because you got to, like, find the D-loop and...
He does have a pinch to close now, though.
Yeah, which is cool.
It is cool.
I actually used to do that with my old dual caliber, too. But you'd have to, like, pinch the end of it, pretty much. And then use your middle finger to flick kick the... Anyways, you have to pretty much look down and get that D-loop inside of those. Now, with my hook release, I put my finger on the trigger. I put my thumb on the opposite side of the release, like where the mechanical part is, right? And then there's just a hook sticking out in front of it. And then I take the tip of my thumb, run it down my bowstring until I feel the D-loop, and then just kind of just hook it in there without even looking.
Yep.
And it's literally happens in less than a second.
It's cool. I'm going to definitely practice it. I every year I intend to shoot as few deer from the ground as possible. But sometimes you get in that situation, you know what I mean?
You shot two deer for sure from the ground this year.
Did I? South Texas one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then South Dakota, tree, cruiser saddle.
Colorado's tree.
Tree, cruiser saddle.
Nebraska's a tree. That feels like 3 years ago.
I forgot Nebraska was last year. Yeah. So you shot just those two deer, which y'all will, bro, we've talked about that. By the way, your drink cup is about to spill down there.
Oh, thanks for telling me.
Yeah. But we talked about that hunt already, the South Texas hunt one, right?
Yeah.
Y'all might get to see that come out later in the summer or something.
Yeah, we're
like
going to put that out later this summer. So,
yeah.
It's a cool video.
Which is the exact situation you were talking about, or we've been talking about, with the ranging on the ground thing.
Yep.
Is that you had a difficult time with that there.
I had to. I mean, I basically had to expose myself to that deer for me to range him or where he's coming through. And he saw me, but which ultimately led to him being on edge. Instead of just, you know, going his own way, I had to get above the grass. He sees me, and he kind of is doing that whole, like, I'm going to look, then I'm going to take three steps, and I'm going to look. And finally, he took some steps. I drew, and then he looks over at me because he knows that something's there, and I shoot. And it hits high. It killed him. There's no doubt. It was in there. I thought we were going to find him.
You had torrential downpour soon after that, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, he definitely jumped string. And and I also probably misjudged him by about 5 yards. So, at distance, that's a decent amount. And you add the jump in there. So, yeah, that's the things. I mean, those are the things. And this is stuff like, I don't love having to put that out there, having to talk about it, because I don't love that happens at all. But this happens to a lot of guys, and a lot of you out there right now are listening going, yeah, it happened to me last year, you know? And then there's the dudes that are really self-righteous that think that never happens to them. And here's the deal, is like, it didn't happen to me a whole lot growing up, but I shot a lot of deer at feeders, you know what I mean? And so
Known distance.
Known distance. You know the exact deer. Calm deer. They're feeding, like, and they're not only known distance, but they're 20 or 25. Mm-hmm. And that's like,
if you're smart.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Y'all's were.
Yeah. And so anyway, yeah, it just makes it, it makes it efficient, which is not a bad thing. I'm not, you know, I'm not saying
men
that
fishing.
I'm fishing makes men fishing in fishermen. But I definitely, and I'm not even opposed to doing that now, but I'm just saying growing up, that's what I did a lot. And now, because I have, been such a dreamer and am so poor these days, I'm having to chase deer across wide open public ground just to get a chance to kill some deer instead of just getting a lease, you know.
Money, I mean, poor and buck rich.
That's right. That's right, man. Money poor, buck rich. If I was money rich, I could be buck rich too, though.
That's true. So. Finding a way to be buck rich despite being money poor. There that's you go. What we do.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
But anyway, I'm kind of looking forward to tinkering with some stuff a little bit just to fine tune what I've got going on this year, mm-hmm. as far as like the bow setup goes, the archery stuff, and potentially, you know, hyping about some tags and stuff. I know you got a tag in the mail the other day.
I did get a tag in the mail. We teased this here all back, right?
I don't know. I think so.
All right. Did I tell everybody really what's going on here?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right.
This is exciting, y'all.
It's exciting. So I'm just going to take it easy. I received an Arizona elk tag in the mail.
Dadgummit, dude.
We're going to Arizona.
Going to be just hanging out in the palm trees and shooting elk.
That's right, dude. Hope so. Is it palms?
No, I just feel like there's an oceanfront property in
Arizona. Oh, okay, got you. April Fool's, right? No, this ain't no April Fool's, guys. I drew Arizona elk tag, so this is about to be real crazy.
Dude, how many bugling bulls are going to be coming in?
A lot.
As many as want to.
As many because as they want to. That's right.
Isn't that right?
I think so. I think that, and this is a pretty good unit. Mm-hmm. Like, this ain't like I drew a stupid unit, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is a good spot.
Yeah.
So, pretty excited about it.
Yeah. Going to make some elk hair caddis?
Maybe. I've never tied a fly with elk hair that I have shot the elk from.
Yeah.
Might need to do that one of these days.
Be cool.
Would be cool. I've tied some deer hair flies with deer I've killed.
Yeah.
Lots of clousers. If you're a fly fisherman, you're not saving your deer tails, you need to be. Because, like,
especially if they're from, like, north of the Mason Dixon.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah. Texas ones don't make great. But them, like, that South Dakota tail, I was like, man, this is a cool buck. But look at that tail.
Yep. It's crazy, dude.
I know.
That's a real flag.
It is, man. They flagging them in.
Yeah. But, so, speaking of deer, are you doing anything in April to really prep for deer hunting next fall?
Excluding element business, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to fish this time of year, frankly.
Me too. But this is straight up map season for me, usually. So I spend a lot of time daydreaming and you and I have this talk pretty often where we spend like 15 minutes on the map and we're like,
is this worth
it? Yeah, is this worth it? And we had this talk the other day about a state and I was like, yeah, I think that within the next 2 or 3 years, I will be hunting whitetail here or in this state at least. So it's worth spending the time.
Right? It was Alaska, by the way.
Yeah, Alaska. We're going to hunt those, them blacktails or whatever they got up there. So anyways, that's probably, if I'm doing something, it's maps and mm-hmm. thinking about where we're either going to go this year or in the future and then correlating that with everyone's favorite thing, DNR websites. and outside of that, there's a little bit of gear stuff, you know, thinking about like what, you know, outerwear pieces I might need or boots or really right now. I probably can't say that. Some people we work with are going to come out with some cool stuff and been thinking about that. But really, you know, gear and maps, probably.
I'm tired of these companies that won't let us talk about anything.
I know. You know, like, just come out with it already.
Come on.
I know it. I know it. Oh, by the way, I've been having some conversations with a company.
like between two ferns. Those kind of conversations.
Conversations.
Yeah, conversations.
Yeah, conversations. I thought you were going to say between two skater shoes, conversations. But conversations. So.
Jennifer Aniston.
That's right.
So dope.
Hate us, I know.
These people are clicking off in masses right now.
Yo, Element Boys might be designing a mechanical broadhead right now. That's what I'm saying.
That's cool,
I'm
man.
I'm going to say that, guys.
That's cool.
And if you want to make mechanicals great again, you can via purchasing a shirt. Tyler, where'd you get that shirt you got on right there?
Man, I got it from myself. I got it from theelementwild.com.
That's cool.
It says make mechanicals great.
You had to go order your own shirt and pull it from your own inventory, which is kind of true. Anytime we take one of our own shirts, we have to take it out of inventory. But
it's a cool deal. Many of you guys know Parker McDonald. He designed this for us, which is very kind of him.
Yeah.
And anyway, we wanted to give people a voice that don't feel like they have a voice. And that's what we did with this shirt.
That's such a good political line, dude.
The people that have a voice tend to be a single bevel, 6,000 grain arrow broadhead.
You see, I put on the story the other day.
Yep.
And that was off of that. There's a Facebook group called Heavy Arrow Hunt Club, which is kind of funny because there's a it's probably a minority, but not like tiny minority. But there's a minority of guys who realize that it's a little excessive, but whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of the thing is like these people get real high on their horse about what broadheads they shoot, and namely that's fixed blade. And because some guy who sells a lot of fixed blade broadheads said something and they think he's cool and he's killed some stuff, then that's the way it is. And they haven't done any testing of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to give people like our boy Chris Webb or myself just a voice, you know, and say like, look, I understand that what you do is effective for you potentially, or maybe you just are on the forum all the time and you don't actually hunt, but there is another way to kill deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that my way is the best, but it works good for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it and I've killed some deer with it. I'm not saying it's not going to fail, but then again, there's a potential for your bleeder blade to break off too. So
there's a potential for your bleeder blade to just not do what it's supposed to.
That's right.
Flashback a la this year, KC shot a deer where it should have killed him with a very, very, very popular fixed blade.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't kill him.
Yeah.
And it's wild. Would have.
Double lunged him,
but it did not do a very good job.
You saying he didn't bleed from the bleeders?
He did not bleed from the bleeders very good. You, a few days later, shot a giant buck with a mechanical, and he died in sight.
And it didn't hit him till it was 50 yards downrange, and it still went all the way through him.
That's right.
So that's why I shoot a nice, heavier arrow.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. And I actually had this conversation with the engineer, and he said everything I said made sense, which is, he's a nice engineer, because they don't like to say that very often, right? So energy and momentum are different. Energy is a constant pretty much, no matter what bow, what speed, or whatever you're doing. Momentum can change because they have different factors, okay? And they are separate from one another. Your momentum is what is important to push an arrow through something, mm-hmm. right? Because energy is only worth something if it's transferred, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. I can punch the air and it's not doing anything. Mm. But if I punch a guy's face, which I don't do very often, unless they comment on YouTube or something stupid, then like the energy transfer is what's doing the deed, mm-hmm. right? And with guns, you're looking for energy transfer with bullets, right? Mm-hmm. With arrows, you're not looking for energy transfer. You want that thing to pass through. So momentum is what is important. If you shoot a high momentum setup, which I can't remember the formula, right? But a heavy arrow shot out of a high poundage bow.
E equals MC squared, I think.
I don't think that's momentum. That's Einstein's theory of relativity. But anyways, a high momentum arrow will, by all means, put a gigantic broadhead through a gigantic animal. Yep. No problem.
Now, is there a law of diminishing returns?
There is, I'm sure. Isaac seems to think it's at 550 grains out of a modern compound bow shot at 70 pounds. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure because I have not experimented enough. So here's the thing with what we do, guys. From about September 1 till December 31, maybe even the end of January, I'm doing zero experimentation.
Yeah.
Because we are hunting and killing. Mm. And I ain't got time to be like, oh, let me just change my sight tape and go to a 25 grain less arrow and see what happens, right? I need to find what works and shoot it. So this year, I shot 600 grains, fixed blades and mechanicals. I guess I did do a little experimenting, but it wasn't with weights, you know, right? So, and a well-tuned bow. And my most lethal setup was mechanicals on the front end of a 600 grain arrow. I don't know the difference, subtract 50 grains, like what that would have done to animals.
Yeah.
Probably would have killed them dead too. But I don't know how much difference. I like that 550 grain spot, but I really like how quiet and how stable how quiet my bow was and how stable my arrow was at the 600 grain range. So I don't know. Remains to be seen.
Yeah.
Either way, there is not a diminishing return on if you can punch an arrow all the way through something and have a broadhead that remains mechanically sound. If you can get a 6-inch cut, shoot a 6-inch cut.
Yeah.
Because guess what? The thing is going to die quicker, which is what we're trying to do, right? Yeah. You're trying to be, dare I say, ethical.
Yeah.
Right? So
you don't just put a little hole in chicken's neck.
That's right.
Cut that sucker off.
That's right. Hit it with a water bottle. Kill it dead. That's another story for another time. But, it's all well and cool that your broadhead penetrates, you know, for forever, but it's got a 7/8-inch cut. Dude, you finding that thing 3 coolies over, you know what I mean? Like, do something that's going to do some damage. And a lot of times that's – the reason that's the case, too, is because – it's about near impossible for a human to shoot a projectile that is a fixed blade that's really, really big and have good arrow flight. Mm. The thing that people don't understand, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of tirading right now.
That's all good.
But the thing that people don't understand is that this is all well and good. Tuning your bow is super important. Having an arrow that spins true is super important. All that stuff that actually isn't as important as people think it is, but whatever. What you cannot control is human error. We all are in error, right? Because we are human. It is the human condition. So you're going to have it. Why not, if you can be as lethal as possible, take some of that out by putting a broadhead on that is so much easier to tune. That is a mechanical broadhead.
It's not so dependent on the way you hold the bow.
That's right.
The way you pull the trigger.
Yeah.
All the different factors that you can mess up.
Yeah. All that.
Because I can promise you, dude, when I set up to shoot that deer at 50, there was about two things going through my mind. One of them was get this dadgum release clipped on the D-loop. And the other was like, is he looking at me?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how much time do I have?
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much like the two things I was thinking. Is like, get this thing on there, get back. And if I have time, try to settle the pin.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, I'm trying to settle the pin. There was no make sure my form's good and I look up at my cam and see if it's torqued or, you know, whatever, leaning or whatever. No, there was none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's from the ground. Now, out of a saddle, it's the same deal. Like, you're trying to hide from that deer until you can get fully drawn on him, and then you peek out and shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you're leaning, no telling which direction.
Mm-hmm.
Same deal, like you're talking about, is like, man, you just don't really have time in a hunting situation most of the time to do that, to think about all the different forms, especially when you grunt stopped a deer, you know, or whatever. Now, there are situations where you could potentially do all that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are situations where you practice enough, like guys are yelling at me right now, like, just practice enough and get your form right. And it's like, okay, well, that's fair enough, but there's still conditions. There's weather conditions. There's wind. Like, if the wind is blowing across your bow, there's a good chance there's some sort of torque in your hand. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter how solid you're holding it as compared to every other time you've held it. Like, there's some sort of torque there. And my thumbs are going to torque it for sure because I got weird, non-disposable disposable thumbs. But, yeah, so anyway, we're going to do some shooting, though, this summer. Mm-hmm. We got everybody's favorite, Eric Gentry, is moving down to Texas pretty soon. Actually, we're going to be on this turkey hunt with Chad next, however, whenever it is. And then Eric's coming to Texas from there. He's going to move down here, and we're going to be putting all kinds of cool video stuff together with him. And then he's going to be feeling just a lot better with his vitamin D intake that he's going to have because it's still snowing up there where he's at. And he's just going to – he's going to become even more everybody's favorite, man.
That's
so
right.
Your long-haired, red-headed cousin.
Brother. As people like to say.
Brother. Are y'all brothers?
I don't know if y'all know this, but people have asked Eric and I if we're brothers like 4 different times.
Yeah.
Which – I may have talked about this on podcast, sorry, but like, what a weird question.
Yeah.
Does she like just walk around in crowds and be like, hey, y'all brothers, what's the matter if we are? Like, what, like yeah, you know, like, yeah. Why do you want to know that answer?
I know. Is that like, what is the point? Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's strange.
Like, if I see a guy and like a dude that's like 8 with him that looks like him, I just assume. I don't have to ask him, like, is that your son?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah, what a weird thing. You know, it's like, you know, you go to a conference and, like, you know, you're wearing a suit jacket and a button-up, and then there's a guy wearing a suit jacket, button-up, and a tie. Do you go up and be like, is that your boss? You know, like, why? Why would you do that? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's such a strange thing.
It is strange. So coming up for us, we've been preparing – very little for deer hunting, as you can see. We do a little map scouting. We're going to pull some trail cameras here soon and kind of get them back in decent condition. We've been shooting hogs, which is kind of preparation in a way for shooting. And then what we really have coming up, though, is a lot of fishing, I think. We're pretty excited about this pond hopping series because it's super fun for us and hopefully something you guys like. And then also, we bought something that could potentially help us do some pretty sick stuff.
I'm so excited.
We bought a boat.
Dadgummit!
And it's like not many boats you've ever seen. It is quite a different boat, and we'll have to, you know, post some stuff with the boat here soon.
Mm-hmm. It's a DIY boat for sure.
For sure.
We did not go out and buy a, you know, what's the big Ranger, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, or we didn't go buy a gator tail, none of that.
Yep.
It's its own thing.
It is. And you guys will have to see. We're not even going to explain it to you, but it's small. It travels. It's got a trailer. It's got a motor. And it's going to be really cool. We're going to do some river fishing, I think, in it this summer. So you'll see it then. And we're real excited about it. But anyway, anything else you want to talk about?
Nah, man. I'm just kind of hype right now, I'll tell you the truth.
Me too.
Started this podcast a little bit on the chill side, but now I'm like, let's go. You know?
Yep.
Apparently, we just both got a text message from somebody.
Chad.
Chadwick Rice. We got to coordinate some turkey stuff with Chad.
That's right.
I talked to Dudley Phelps this morning for a second. He said that the morale should be going insane in Tennessee next week.
Really?
So. Yep. Hope you have fun turkey hunting. Because I'm all about it.
We need a turkey morel smallmouth bass filet dinner.
That's right, dude. Heck, yummy. That sounds good. Oh, all right. Well, let's do that thing.
Okay.
Y'all remember, get out there and do whatever you can to have a little fun. Take care of your family this time of year because this fall is going to be crazy, and y'all know you want to do everything you can then. So remember that, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2nd, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4th, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5th, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.